VSiN Weekend Morning Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We are off and running on a Sunday morning. Happy Father's Day, everyone. I'm Tim Murray, live from the Circa Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas, as we get you ready for a busy day ahead. No NBA Finals tonight, no Stanley Cup Final today, but we have the final round of the U.S. Open, College World Series, plenty of baseball, and of course, plenty of preview opportunities for Game 5 of the NBA Finals on Monday night, and what we saw last night on the ice north of the border in Edmonton as the Panthers reclaim that series lead. They lead 3-2, heading back to Sunrise, Florida to try to clinch their second straight Stanley Cup crown. Once again, I'm Tim Murray with you for the next 3 hours here on VSiN. And I was on the air last night, and I've got a question to start the show. We've got a structure here on the VSiN Weekend Morning Line, right? We set the scene for you guys. We take a look back at last night. But I do want to start early here with a question to ponder. Because so far, I would say this, through 9 championship games, 5 on the ice, 4 on the hardwood, it's been pretty damn entertaining, right? But we've seen some rather tough beats to swallow when we look back to what we saw on Friday night, if you had the Pacers plus 6, and what we saw last night, if you had the under 6.5 goals. Anyone out there have under 6.5? I did. Yes. It was 2-0 going into the third period. And at one point in time, 5 minutes into the third period last night, with the Panthers leading 2-0 over the Edmonton Oilers, the live line at DraftKings dropped to 3.5. Granted, juiced to the over minus 166, but when I looked at my computer last night hosting Live Bet Saturday, I saw a 3.5 out there, and I had 6.5 under in my back pocket. And then, yeah, everything went sideways. Here's a little glimpse of when the moment happened last night on Live Bet Saturday as I watched my under 6.5 go up in flames north of the border.
And I have myself to blame, a guy who hosts live betting shows, and I could have set up a middle multiple times throughout the evening, and I didn't do so. So, you know, it's a lesson from a betting standpoint is when you have the opportunity to, as there it is, officially the game has gone over, the goal does hit, and just like that, it was 2-0 going into the third period, and the Florida Panthers and the Edmonton Oilers are now 5-0 to the over. Unreal. I mean, oh, wow.
Oh,
yep.
That's all you can do at this point is just laugh. Under 6.5. Hey, congratulations to all of you out there who are now 5-0 on not only the first period over, which cashed last night with less than 2 minutes to go in the first period from the Sam Bennett goal off of the Matt Tkachuk rebound. And then if you had the over 6.5, good for you. Look, I'm not going to begrudge you. Sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. And now 5-0 to the over on both first period and full game. My question to ponder here, and you could feel free to tweet me at @1TimMurray to start the show. What was more brutal? Pacers plus 6 from Friday night or under 6.5 last night? The Pacers, as we all remember, double-digit lead late in the third quarter of game four, in Indianapolis, looking like they're going to take care of business, have a 3-1 lead going back to Oklahoma City, this close to the first NBA championship in franchise history. And then the defense from Oklahoma City put the clamps down. And as you watch the ending of that game, if you had plus 6, it was pretty gross to watch that thing unfold when at one point in time, it was 103-102. Actually, to even go back further, Tyrese Haliburton hits a 3. It's a 4-point lead with less than 3 minutes to go by the Indiana Pacers, and they didn't cover 6. And the Florida Panthers and the Edmonton Oilers, with 15 minutes to go in the third period, had 2 goals in the over 6.5 cashed in regulation. I don't know what was more painful. Look, I had under 6.5. I did not have Pacers plus 6. I'll actually be honest with you guys. Should I like what I tried to do here? I actually think Pacers plus 6 was more painful. Because at some point, you knew empty netters are going to come about. And I told Mark Malusis this last night. When it was 4-1 and there were about 4.5 minutes to go, the Oilers pulled Cal Picker. And I said, we cannot have an Oilers goal. That is the one thing we can't have. Because if it gets to 5-1, maybe they just throw the goalie back in and we should be fine. The one thing we cannot afford is an Oilers goal. And sure enough, the 40-year-old Corey Perry scores another goal, his 10th of the postseason, and makes it 4-2. At that point, you knew we were toast. And we were. At one Tim Murray is where you can tweet me. Uplifting way to start the show, right? Hey, maybe you had over 7.5, over 6.5, and you laid the chalk with a Thunder. Maybe you're feeling good, or you have a Sam Burns ticket in your back pocket. All right, enough of that. Let's get to how we start the show each and every Saturday and Sunday here on the VSiN Weekend Morning Line. Let's get you ready for the day. Let's set the scene.
Let's dive into the biggest games of the day.
US Open, Oakmont Country Club, the final round today. Your leader is Sam Burns. He sits at 4-under. Just a week ago, Sam Burns was in a playoff at the Canadian Open and trying now to win the US Open as he heads into the final round today. Sam Burns is plus 170 at DraftKings. Adam Scott and JJ Spahn just a stroke back. Scott 3-1, JJ Spahn plus 350. Your final grouping today, Sam Burns and Adam Scott, they will get their round started at 2:15 Eastern time. Let's hear from the leader, Sam Burns, 4-under through three rounds at Oakmont Country Club.
Yeah, it'd be incredible. I think, as a kid growing up, you dream about winning major championships, and that's why we practice so hard and work so hard. And all these guys in this field, I think, would agree that, to have the opportunity to win a major is special. And I'm definitely really excited for tomorrow.
Sam Burns yesterday shooting a 69, so 1-under par, shot a 72 to start his U.S. Open, 2-over, then the 65 in round two, and yesterday a 69. So 4-under, one stroke lead heading into the final round. This historical trend, though, not necessarily on his side, courtesy of Justin Ray, who is tremendous at looking at some of these trends when it comes to golf. Sam Burns leads by one with 18 holes to play at the U.S. Open all time. Players with a one-shot lead through 54 holes at this championship have won 32% of the time. So once again, players with a one-shot lead at the U.S. Open all time heading into the final round are just 14 of 44, hitting at a 32% clip. Across the others' majors, as Justin Ray points out, the last 40 years, players win at a 42% rate with a one-shot 54-hole lead. So history not really on the side of Sam Burns heading into the final round. And as mentioned, he will be paired up with Adam Scott, the ageless Adam Scott, trying to win his second career major. And another note here regarding today's action is what to expect from Adam Scott if he were to win the U.S. Open. As Justin Ray points out, the longest gap between a player's first and second major championship is 11 years. Julius Boros and Ben Crenshaw, Adam Scott's lone major was more than 12 years ago. So Adam Scott, who is trying to get a major, last one he won, the 2013 Masters, trying to do it here today. And Adam Scott, who I believe prior to his round yesterday was 16-1, right now sits at 3-1. JJ Spahn is plus 350. He was your leader after the first round. I give him a lot of credit, right? He is still hanging in there after being your first round leader. We talked about that on Thursday night's VSiN primetime. He was around 80-1 to be your first round leader. I think that was the number at the Westgate Superbook. Still hanging in. He will be in your second to last group, JJ Spahn and Victor Hovland. So that is where we sit heading into that action today. And we will get Wes Reynolds on the program coming up bottom of the hour, and he will give us his thoughts. Real quickly, we do have a lot of baseball today, including college baseball. The College World Series, so far, worth noting, 3-1 to the under. And we've got two more games this afternoon as coming up at 1 o'clock Central Time there in Omaha. Louisville and Arizona. Loser of that game is adios. That is the loser's bracket. So the first team to be eliminated will be early this afternoon. And then tonight, we got Coastal Carolina, who has not lost a game since mid-April. They are riding a ridiculous winning streak after they beat Louisville in the opener, they beat Arizona in the opener. They are a minus 130 favorite over Oregon State. Tons of College World Series chatter for all of you as the day goes on. And lastly, on the baseball front, a whole lot to get to from a major league standpoint. Yankees trying to avoid a sweep at the hands of the Boston Red Sox. Red Sox held on for dear life late last night. Max Fried on the hill for the Yankees as around a minus 180 favorite. We've got Wes Reynolds coming up bottom of the hour, Colin Wilson later on this hour as well to give us his thoughts on the College World Series. We'll hit about last night here on the other side of this break, but just a reminder, folks, if you're looking to jump in this time of year, get ready for the NFL, well, no better way than with a VSiN Pro subscription. $199 for a full year, and you get a free pre-order of the NFL Sharp Betting Playbook by Josh Applebaum. Use the promo code BOOK at VSiN.com/subscribe. The Panthers took care of business. We'll tell you how next about last night.
You're tuned in to the VSiN Weekend Morning Line.
Sunday morning, it is the VSiN Weekend Morning Line. The U.S. Open final round coverage is already underway. We will not see the leaders out there until later on this afternoon. Final pairing of Adam Scott and Sam Burns will get their round going at 2:15 Eastern time. Prior to that, J.J. Spahn and Victor Hovland at 2:04 Eastern time. We'll talk to Wes Reynolds coming up in less than 15 minutes live from Indianapolis. Wes has been busy, man. Saw both of the NBA Finals games, went to the Caitlin Clark performance last night as she went for 32 in the Fever win over the New York Liberty. The Liberty's first loss of the year, 102-88, the final score yesterday at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. We'll talk to Wes coming up in just a little bit. We'll get his thoughts not only on the final round of the U.S. Open, but of course what he witnessed there in Games 3 and Game 4 and what he expects to happen on Monday night down in Oklahoma City. Later on this hour, Colin Wilson talking college baseball. He was there, unfortunately for him, watching his Arkansas Razorbacks fall to the LSU Tigers 4-1 yesterday. We'll see if Arkansas, now in the loser's bracket, do they have enough to come out of said loser's bracket in Omaha? Can they knock off the Cinderella story that is Murray State, beat UCLA, more than likely, not assuming anything, and then get back to an opportunity to take on Arkansas. So we'll get to all of that as the hour goes on. You can always tweet me. I'm at one Tim Murray. But what we like to do here on the show, as it is early for us here in Las Vegas, just a little after 7 o'clock, but even for you, might just be getting up, getting that dust out of your eyes, running your errands, didn't see everything that unfolded last night. And that's fine. That's why we're here for you. And sometimes you got those text messages when you were in college. Hey, man, about last night. That's what we like to call this segment, about last night. We already talked about the bad beat. We don't need to belabor the point of the over coming home in the Panthers-Oilers game, despite there being two goals through the first 45 minutes of hockey action. The game still going over 6.5. We don't have to mention that anymore. We'll put that to the side. What we can mention is that the Florida Panthers are now one win away from their second straight Stanley Cup. They win last night 5-2 north of the border. They were the dominant team. And really, let's be real, they've been the dominant team the entirety of this series. The Oilers have had some epic comebacks. Game 4, none bigger than coming back from 3 goals down in the third period. But this is a team that has just gotten off to consistent slow starts in all 5 of these games. Had to come back from a 3-1 deficit in Game 1 as well to win that game in overtime. And Matthias Ekholm is getting a little tired of these slow starts there for his Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think we've come out flat now with most of the series. So that's something. I think it's a mindset. I think we just got to make sure we get pucks in. Try to put pressure on them. They're obviously a good team for a reason, and they've come out and shown that early in the games. And we gotta find a way to be better than that in the start.
Yeah, you think back to game four, 3-0, Florida leads after one period. Last night, it's 2-0. It has been Edmonton off to these rather slow starts here in this Stanley Cup final. As even you think back to game number one, down 2-1 after the first period. This is a team in the Edmonton Oilers, despite being in this series only down 3-2, that has failed to have a lead after two periods. They led 3-2 after game two, but then we're down 4-3 going into the third period in game two. So right now, here we sit. It is a 3-2 series lead for the Florida Panthers. But a question for the Edmonton Oilers right now is, what do we do in net? What do the Edmonton Oilers do in the pipes? Because Stuart Skinner got pulled in game four. Cal Pickard came in and was phenomenal in net in that comeback victory, right? He was tremendous, earned the opportunity to start. He had been undefeated this postseason. Well, last night, not the case. Gives up 4 goals. And now there's a question for Chris Knobloch. What do we do in net heading into game six? Chris Knobloch, last night after the loss, on his mindset on what they're going to do with their goaltenders.
I'm not going to make that decision right now after a tough loss like tonight. From what I saw, I think Picks didn't have much chance on those goals. And, breakaways, shots through screens, slot shots, there's nothing saying that it was a poor performance. So, that's what I see from it now.
All right, so we will see what Edmonton will do come Tuesday night in net, but enough of the losers. Let's talk about the winners last night, and that was the Florida Panthers. And for any old head out there, Brad Marchand, how about what we're seeing from him? We talked about Adam Scott and the potential, right, of him having the longest gap between majors in golf history, 12 years if he were to win it today. How about Brad Marchand? He had 5 goals in the Stanley Cup final in 2011 with the Boston Bruins, and now he's got 6 goals in the Stanley Cup final this year, a 14-year gap as he joins some rarefied air. And before we get to that unique fraternity that Brad Marchand joined last night, let's hear from Marchand after a tremendous performance last evening leading the Panthers to that 5-2 victory.
Man, that guy's good looking. Probably be it. it's just how it plays out sometimes. Sometimes you get balances, sometimes you don't. But definitely he'd be grateful to be in this opportunity and have another opportunity to be in the finals and be part of a really good team for sure.
How about this fraternity that Brad Marchand joined last night? It is a pretty exclusive group. It is he and Super Mario. Mario Lemieux, the only players in NHL history to score 5 goals in multiple Stanley Cup finals over the last 59 years. That's the fraternity. Mario Lemieux and that gentleman you just heard from there and Brad Marchand. Here are more stats regarding Marchand and this postseason. Leads all active players in Stanley Cup final goals with 13. First player to score 6 goals in a cup final since 1988. First player to score 5-plus goals in a cup final for 2 different teams. Most road goals in a cup final, 5. And 10 goals in 22 playoff games at the age of 37. And Greg Wyshynski from ESPN put this tweet out there, because right now, Sam Bennett of the Panthers is your odds-on favorite to win the Conn Smythe Trophy at minus 220. Brad Marchand, before his second goal last night, which was just ridiculous, the jump stop, jumping past a defender, going 5-hole on Cal Pickard to make it 3-0 in the third period. He was around 12-1 to win the Conn Smythe prior to that. He scored the game's first goal. He scored the third goal. He's down to plus 450. And this is what Greg Wyshynski had to say for the case for Brad Marchand to win the Conn Smythe. In games following a loss this postseason, he has a point in all seven of them, 7 goals and 4 assists for 11 points in games following a loss for the Florida Panthers, and he has 2 game-winning goals, both of which coming in overtime. That's the case right there that Greg Wyshynski is putting out there for Brad Marchand to potentially win the Conn Smythe for the MVP of the postseason. He has been phenomenal. Win or lose, from a Conn Smythe standpoint, 37-year-old Brad Marchand, I'm going to go ahead and say there were a couple acquisitions that teams made that are trying to win championships that are pretty happy about them. I think the Thunder are okay with the Alex Caruso trade for Josh Giddey. I think they're okay with it now that he's had 2 20-point performances in the NBA Finals. And I'm going to go ahead and say that the Florida Panthers are rather happy that they made the trade with the Boston Bruins to bring Brad Marchand down to Sunrise. 3-2, that series sits. Game 6 on Tuesday night, Panthers and Oilers. Panthers already opened up as a favorite. We'll see. Will we get another first period over? Will we get another full game over? 5-0 to both the full game and first period overs. Wes Reynolds is going to join us on the other side of the break. We'll talk a little U.S. Open, what he's witnessed so far with the Pacers taking on the Thunder. There was a ton of baseball comebacks yesterday, but I ended up spending too much time here talking about what we saw on the ice last night, because the Florida Panthers now 1 win away from becoming back-to-back Stanley Cup champs. And it hasn't been that long. The state of Florida won themselves back-to-back Stanley Cups, right? 20 and 21 with the Tampa Bay Lightning. As we know, the Stanley Cup and the NBA Finals, folks, are here to stay, and ProfitX is offering the best odds all playoffs long. ProfitX is a peer-to-peer sports exchange available in 40-plus states, the first of its kind in the U.S. You'll be able to make your sports picks against other groups of fans rather than against the sportsbooks. Exchanges guarantee you the best odds on average by 10 to 20%. You can even request your own odds. Download ProfitX today and make sure you use the code VSIN, V-S-I-N, to earn up to $200 in profit cash over your first month. The final round of the U.S. Open is underway. Will Sam Burns be your U.S. Open champ? We'll ask Wes Reynolds that next year on VSiN.
You're tuned in to the VSiN Weekend Morning Line.
We keep it rolling here on a Sunday morning. Happy Father's Day to all. I am Tim Murray, live from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. We just discussed what we saw last night, the brilliance from Brad Marchand, the 37-year-old wonder that is Brad Marchand. And Gary Sutton on Twitter, you could always tweet me at one, Tim Murray, said, Marchand looked like Sidney Crosby while creating and scoring on his second goal last night. Holy cow, that was some brilliant stuff to pump up the Panthers and deflate the Oilers. Yeah, that goal was... Now, pick your superstar you'd like to compare it to. I'd like to compare it to Alex Ovechkin on that jump cut and goal. But, you know, to each their own. Tomato, tomato, however you want to define it. But when I talk about superstars, that's who we bring in right now on our Progressive Guest Line. The one and only Wes Reynolds, live from Indianapolis. He's taking it all in up there in his hometown of Indianapolis. He was in attendance yesterday at the Caitlin Clark game. Yes, the Indiana Fever and Liberty play, but it was a Caitlin Clark performance. We'll get to that here in just a moment, but so many people, Wes, want to know, what do we do today regarding the U.S. Open? I mentioned some of the numbers regarding folks with a one-stroke lead heading into the final round of the U.S. Open. It's not ideal. Look, Sam Burns, I'm sure, won't trade away being up one stroke, but only 32% of leaders by one stroke heading into the final round of the U.S. Open have gone on to win. So when you look at the board today, Sam Burns, 4 under, Adam Scott, J.J. Spahn, 3 under, Victor Hovland, 1 under. Let's start with the leader. What are you expecting from Sam Burns today as he heads in at plus 170 to win the U.S. Open?
Well, if you're against him like I am, I was on him actually last week, and I'll be really ticked off, by the way, if he wins this week, considering I had him in the playoff at the RBC Canadian Open, and he didn't get it done. So, you know, that's the frustration of being a golf bettor, is sometimes you tip a guy, and then he wins the next week. Maybe that'll be the case with Burns, but he hasn't three-putted all week. So, you know, is a three-putt coming at some point on these fast greens at Oakmont? The approaches have been terrific. The iron play, I believe he's second in iron play in the field behind Victor Hovland, who's really my only chance to win a pre-tournament outright here. He is at one under par. He gave one back on the 18th. But I think that he's the best pedigree of the four that are in red figures. There's Sam Burns, Adam Scott are in the final pairing. Then J.J. Spaun will be with Victor Hovland. So you only got four guys under par here. And I felt the winning score was going to be about two under, and that's looking like what it might be. I think Burns hangs in there, but I'm going to go with Victor. I got to trust my pre-tournament read and think that he's going to win the trophy here at the U.S. Open this afternoon.
Well, that makes at Dubs Sports Win very happy. He said, I have a funny feeling about Victor today to win this thing. I hope Wes gives him a shot at the bottom of the hour, and he does right there. Victor Hovland sitting at around 6-1. It does look like, just reading the market, a little bit of support has come in on Victor Hovland. He was around plus 650. You know, it's funny, Wes, because my pre-US Open bets, and most of them, as I, you know, full disclosure, I listen to you, I listen to our guy Steve Sands, I listen to Jeff Seeley, whoever, you know, put those together, Matt Humans, and put some bets out there. Not feeling great right now about the pre-tournament bets, so might have to throw a little something on Victor Hovland for a little Father's Day sweat here. Let's ask about guys a little bit. All right, what were you going to jump in on?
No, I was going to say, yeah, I hope he's going to need to save me, the Norwegian here, because I'm the same way, Tim. I did not have a lot of good guys outright that played very well. A lot of the elite players did not play well this week.
You know, this time of this day and age, I should say, you can't talk golf without talking Scottie Scheffler. We know that Scottie Scheffler, more than likely, I guess he could do the impossible, but he's four over. My question to you would be this. What do we expect from Scottie today? He's T11. He's plus four. Do you think we get a strong finish from him based off of what we've seen the first three rounds? He's plus $2 to finish top five. Would that be something that you would look at, or are you very concerned about his performance so far through 54 holes?
I'm probably going to stay away, but I could certainly see him, you know, grinding out a one under par round, and hell, that may end up top five because if you look at the stats, there's actually a lot of things to like about how he played. I think he's putted pretty solid in this tournament, and that's the one thing that I think you really were worried about going in with these fast greens. His problem has been driving the golf ball and the fact that he's just not reaching fairways. He's not hitting fairways and greens. I think he's 52% on fairways, 57% on greens. And just the ball striking, Tim, hadn't really quite been there to his standard. Now, he has set like one of the loftiest standards in the history of golf from a ball striking number standpoint. So could perhaps water finds its level and he strikes it a little bit better. Wouldn't be shocked if he shot one or two under today. I don't think he's live to win, though.
Wes Reynolds joining us courtesy of our Progressive guest line. He's there in Indianapolis. He went to both games 3 and 4. He also went yesterday to the incredible performance we saw from Caitlin Clark coming back from injury as she put in 32 against the then unbeaten New York Liberty. But look, you were there for game 4, and I opened the show, Wes, because I had under 6.5 goals last night in Panthers Oilers. And I said, what was a worse beat? Pacers plus 6 or under 6.5? And even though I had under 6.5, I think Pacers plus 6 was as bad as it gets, really. When you think about it, it was 103.99 with less than 3 minutes to go. The Pacers have the lead, and not only did they not win, the Thunder get the victory. So my question to you is this. You were there in attendance for both of these games. Do you believe that this Pacers team can bounce back and be competitive and pull off the upset on Monday night?
I do, Tim. And, you know, I guess at least we come back from our trip to Indianapolis 2-1. We'll take that as sports bettors every single day of the week, twice on Sunday. But, yeah, look, I felt that the series is 2-2, which is what it should be. Oklahoma City should have obviously won game 1, and the Pacers stole it. And Pacers should have won game 4, and Oklahoma City got it. And then I felt 2-3 the clear better team won both of those games. So I'm not ready to write this off because I think that that's the conventional media wisdom. And I often say, when in doubt, go against the conventional media wisdom. And they think that the series is a wrap. I do not, as of yet. I think, you know, having a couple days in between, especially, you know, if they had to play today, maybe there'd be a little bit of a hangover effect, you know, just playing 2 days in between. But now with 3 days in between, they've got some time to kind of gather themselves, get over what happened. I think where, you know, not the offense got very stagnant at the end for the Pacers. A lot too much two-man game with Tyrese and Miles Turner, some really poor looks down the stretch. And it also didn't help with Scott Foster, the extender on the call, and missing a lot of travels and push-off fouls on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. But that's not why the Pacers lost. The Pacers just, I felt the final 4 minutes went too much iso ball and didn't get what got them there, which is moving the ball, driving to the paint, finishing at the rim, and then kicking out when there's the opportunity for the open threes. But yeah, the Pacers got to gather themselves. They know that they let one get away on Friday.
You know, when you look at this game from a pace standpoint and the game that they were able to win in game three that you were in attendance at, it was out and go. Let's go, let's go, let's go. Now, the under still came home in that one as we finished with 223 in that contest. I'm curious your thought process on where we could be from a total standpoint, Wes. Is this a game where we look potentially over? Is Indiana able to go down to OKC and dictate pace? Or are you hesitant on the total right now?
Yeah, because it looks like it could be a buy low spot with these games going under, but it is 2-2 in game number five. And, you know, oftentimes that's an under situation because it's what's going to determine the series, essentially. So you get to a point where you get into the fourth quarter and then it like stalls out a little bit offensively. And you know, teams take those full 24-second possessions and try to get the perfect shot. So, yeah, I don't know if I want to play the over here. But then again, if you use the same logic last night, you took a kick in the pants, where the which I did, a dead right play on the under. Ended up not, as we saw last night.
Yeah, that was lovely. Not and very tongue inserted in cheek as we saw the over come home last night. Hey, Wes, always appreciate it, man. Safe travels back to Vegas, and glad you enjoyed your trip out there, man.
You bet, Tim. Thanks for having me.
There he is. Wes Reynolds joining us courtesy of our Progressive guest line. I was looking for a bet. I'll throw in a little chump change on Victor Hovland to win the U.S. Open at around 6-1. Hey, folks, if you're looking to way to start your day with an edge and a game plan, well, there's no better way than the VSiN Daily Morning Best Bets podcast. It's your first look at the day's betting lines, sharp action, and market move. It's just 15 minutes. You'll get everything you need to know to make smarter wagers and stay ahead of line moves, all before your morning coffee's gone. Hosted by VSiN's team of trusted betting experts, the Daily Morning Bets podcast is fast, focused, and built for bettors like you. Listen to the VSiN Daily Morning Bets podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or get it on the VSiN Watch app. It's the sharpest way to start your betting day. The VSiN Daily Morning Bets podcast. Keep the tweets rolling in at one Tim Murray. We'll continue to mention those as we look back at last night, look ahead to today. But hopefully we could find some winners and maybe some winners on the diamond. The unders are 3-1 so far in the College World Series. Let's talk some College World Series with a man who was at Charles Schwab last night, Colin Wilson of the Action Network.
You're tuned in to the VSiN Weekend Morning Line.
We keep it rolling here on a Sunday morning. It is the VSiN Weekend Morning Line, live from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. I am Tim Murray. We'll have more thoughts on the NBA Finals coming up top of the hour. We'll also go behind the counter in hour number two. Thomas Gable will jump on the program. But today, no NBA Finals, no Stanley Cup Final. But we do get the College World Series continuing out in Omaha. And the headliner of the first four games played out last night. And our next guest is none too pleased. He was in attendance there at Charles Schwab Field. He is the pride of Arkansas, The one and only Colin Wilson joins us right now. You know, Colin, I'll just say this, man. I appreciate you sticking to your commitment to jump on this show, because if I were you, I'd say, Tim, I'm not feeling great. My alarm didn't go off. I'm not coming on this morning. So I appreciate you jumping on after I could only imagine the pain that you felt last night as your Hogs fell 4-1.
Yeah, I'm on my way to Kansas City on Father's Day to watch the Athletics play the Royals. I'm sure the offensive there will be better than what I saw from Arkansas last night. A total of 4 hits, 0-for-9 with runners in scoring position. Pretty pathetic performance from the Hogs last night.
So I got to ask you this, because I was contemplating, I was thinking out loud, okay, these are the two best teams remaining in the field. And we saw that from an odds standpoint. And my question was always going to be, and I actually asked you this when you jumped on my radio show in Memphis late last week, which was the loser of this game or that game, do we look at them in the futures market? So Arkansas does lose. They will be playing Murray State tomorrow. If they win that game, they'll get the loser of UCLA and LSU later on this week. Arkansas right now in the futures market has dropped to 6-1. Do you trust in this bullpen? Do they have enough arms? Do you trust in this lineup to look at the Hogs at 6-1 to potentially come back and win the College World Series?
Absolutely not. And I will tell you, I watched every player interview last night, and every player looked like a deer in the headlights. I mean, just, and they looked like emotionless. The team was wound up like a clock. I've said in multiple places that this team is too emotional because of what the fan base puts on them for a craving for a national title. Dave Van Horn was crying at the podium last week when we did our World Series interviews, and they came out and showed how tight they were. And now they have to go through, what, 4 games in 4 days? And Murray State should be fine. That number is way overpriced. And when that total comes out, I would absolutely consider the over. I know what's going on with the wind and the humidity and the heat and the ball is just not flying. But consider that Arkansas is going to be throwing a complete bullpen game, and their general Tuesday and Wednesday guys are going to use up all their arms, because we have to save the big boys for UCLA and for LSU, because this is going to be a tough stretch of 4 wins in 4 days. But emotionally, just cannot imagine this roster with feeling the pressure of the entire program on their backs. I just don't see it happening. We don't have Paul Skeens. LSU did that in 2023 with Paul Skeens, took a loss with the loser bracket, won out. We don't have Paul Skeens. Our star pitcher went last night and couldn't get out of the second inning.
Colin Wilson joining us courtesy of our Progressive guest line at _Colin1. Make sure to follow all of his content over there as he's handicapping not only the College World Series, but college football as we get closer and closer to the start of the college football season. 69 days. Colin, 69 days to week zero. Just put that in the back of your cap there. All right, let's get to today, as I know you've handicapped every game. So let's get to, first and foremost, you were there last night for both of the games, and they both go under. They are now 3-1, totals are, to the under in Omaha. Granted, small sample size, but history has told us that Charles Schwab plays to the under. It's very un-Rosenblatt-esque, right? So as we look at the totals today, Arizona-Louisville sitting at 10, Coastal Carolina-Oregon State sitting at 9. Are we starting to pay that under tax as it is starting to come in more and more frequently?
It is, and I actually project these games at 11.4 for Arizona and Louisville, and I project this game at 10.4 for Coastal and Oregon State, but you're seeing a market that's at least a run less than that, and what you're paying is 15 to 20 mile an hour wind gusts coming in from center and right field today. You're also paying the fact that the ball is just not carrying. There are balls that Arkansas hit last night, got some barrels on, that just couldn't get anywhere past mid-center field. So power has been zapped right now, and what you have to find is bad defense. And you're going to get that with Louisville today. Louisville has extremely bad defense. That was on display. Arizona is a slap-hitting team. They're doubles. They're number one in the nation in triples. I think there's an avenue for an over in this game. But the ball's not carrying, but neither of these teams are home run hitting clubs. So I would consider it over, but consider the park factors. It's under all the way. And then Coastal is throwing Jacob Morrison today. He has been on fire. He was the reason I picked Coastal to win bracket one. So, yes, you could say that if I had to pick a side in that game against the Beavers, I'd take Coastal, although the line, I think, is perfectly aligned with what my projections are. But Coastal, on the other hand, they love to lay down bunts. They have one of their best pitcher going today. Oregon State is seventh in the nation in fielding percentage, but they just can't allow Coastal runners to get on base, start advancing, and let the pressure mount on them. If I had to take a side, even though I think the line is perfect, I would take Coastal still to win bracket number one. And I'm going to say this right now. LSU is going to burn every pitcher to knock Arkansas out. And if Anthony Ianson gets however many innings on Wednesday and Thursday, Coastal has a real chance to win this College World Series.
All right, well, let's dive into that because that, I find that fascinating because, you know, their coach came out and said after, I think it was they won the regional, hey, we're not Cinderella. And, you know, for folks like yourself who cover the sport as closely as you do, you knew that. But people here at Coastal Carolina, you think, all right, this is probably just like Murray State. No, no, no. This is not the case. This is a national seeded team. So they're a slight favorite today. You know, this team is on a 24-game winning streak. I mean, that's just unheard of, right? They haven't lost a game since April 22nd. So, you know, what is it about this Coastal Carolina team, as you just alluded to? You like them a little bit today. You do think maybe there's a little bit of value there in the futures market as they sit around plus 360 here at Circa. So what it is it about this Coastal team that they've been able to make this remarkable run? And look, history's on their side, right? They've been to Omaha once before, and they won the national championship in 2016.
Yep. Yeah, and so I'll just throw some numbers out there for everybody. This Coastal Carolina team, even though you may shy away because it sounds like a G5 team from the Sun Belt, they're number two in the nation in staff ERA, and they're number three in the nation in staff whip. That is very impressive pitching numbers. I don't care where you're playing. 3.26 is the staff ERA there for them. Their fielding percentage is 29th in the nation. That's elite. Out of, you know, 317 teams, that's elite. But the biggest thing that they do is they are pesky at the plate. They're 11th in sacrifice bunts. If you love the 2015 Kansas City Royals run like I did, it was because they laid bunts down on everybody at advanced runners. That's exactly what Coastal does. So, you know, there's a couple teams in this that do have elite defenses, Oregon State being one of them, Arkansas being one of them. But that's not going to stop Coastal from playing their game, which is pitching, defense, and laying down bunts anytime they can. So they're just a pesky crew to deal with. They're a lot. And I think right now they're the ones that have the best value in the market.
Colin Wilson joining us courtesy of our Progressive guest line. Right now we've got an early line. You mentioned it. UCLA LSU. LSU opened around minus 280 favorite, plus 210 for UCLA. Look, I've been trying to go against this damn UCLA team in the regionals, in the super regionals. I took the run line yesterday with Murray State. I know that was a bet that you had, and we were able to get a four-run comeback to get inside the window of that run line. But what do we make of tomorrow night? Early thoughts on UCLA and LSU there at Charles Schwab?
It all depends on who's pitching that game for LSU. It's hard to be actionable to know what they're going to do with Anthony Ianson. It's a game that I line about minus 260. It's minus 280-ish in the market. And the thing is Anthony Ianson, they're not being real – Jay Johnson is playing real close to the vest what they're going to do with him. Is he going to start and be a starter? Well, I can tell you this, in the seventh or eighth inning, he ran out of the dugout, down to the bullpen, and started getting warmed up. If Arkansas was to manage to get two guys on base, which they never could, Anthony Ianson would have been the guy to come in to shut that game down. So does he continue to play out of the bullpen, or are they going to make him a starter at some point? There's value on UCLA because they are playing very good baseball right now. They are playing, they're number eighth in the country in defense. They do not make mistakes whatsoever. I think that was a key difference of the ball game a little bit against Murray State. The problem with them is their bullpen. Their bullpen is extremely leaky, and you saw that yesterday. Michael Barnett just pitches fantastic against Murray State. Then, I don't know, what did we see? 27 times the coach came out and flipped a rotation guy. I swear the bullpen got called at least 27 times in the middle of a 90-degree day at Omaha. Oh, UCLA has a very bad bullpen. It's a leaky bullpen, and that's what's going to cost them in this game. But the number is completely dependent, Tim, on what Anthony Ianson does. If he is not the starting pitcher tomorrow, there's value on UCLA run line. If he is, that number has a lot of value on LSU.
He is Colin Wilson, en route to Kansas City. I hope your Father's Day is better than yesterday. And just know, 104 days from now, 11 a.m. Central Time in Fayetteville, the Irish come to town, Colin.
Yeah, we're going to lose by at least 17. So you bring all that Notre Dame green and gold down. We'll be ready for you. I'll be on Dixon Street. So I'll have a drink on Dixon Street.
Colin, appreciate it, brother. We'll talk to you soon, man.
All right, thank you for having me.
There he is, Colin Wilson from the Action Network at _Colin1. What a good sport. I'll be honest, man, I wouldn't have come on today. If I were Colin, as big of an Arkansas baseball fan as he is, he was in attendance last night, I'd be like, my throat, it's a little scratchy. True professional, Colin Wilson, jumping on the program to give us his thoughts. Likes Coastal, said doesn't see a ton of value in the number, but does like the Coastal Carolina. Chanticleers at around a minus 130 money line price. It is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.